Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Want to be a part of the Nerd Party community? Don't forget to like our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/thenerdparty and follow us on Twitter at @joinnerdparty. You can also help us by leaving a rating and comment in Apple Podcasts to help spread time and space to other listeners. If you want to contact us, visit thenerdparty.com/contact, click on our show logo, and leave a comment for us there. Time and Space, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Jessica Nunn.
And I'm her husband and co-host, Philip Gilfus.
You are indeed.
Well, Happy New Year, I guess.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yes. Happy New Decade.
Happy New Who.
Happy New Who. I was trying to wind you up and get you to be like, not a new decade!
I think we all know. Well, welcome to Series 12. And new Doctor Who, more adventures with the 13th Doctor and her fam. We saw Spyfall Part 1, of course, on New Year's Day when it aired.
Yep.
And we had an interesting experience on January 5th with Part 2.
Yes, because we thought we were going to the cinema to see... I thought we were going to see Part 2.
I thought we were just going to see Part 1. I was like, oh, we're going to put it in the cinema. Isn't that nice? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they've done with like the first episode, The Woman Who Fell to Earth, like yep. They did with 12th Doctor's Christmas special, like they did with the first 12th Doctor's episode, Deep Breath. I just thought, cool. And then they're going to have a little Q&A afterwards. And I thought that was a little event. Yep. But turns out...
we got to see Part 1 and Part 2 at the cinema.
Yeah, it was very interesting because they put them smoothly together. So we just watched Part 2 as it aired on BBC America. You know, what the actual TV episode looks like. But the way we saw it was like a big TV movie where, you know, at the end you have the Master revealed and the Doctor alone. And then it just goes...
titles and move on.
Yeah, it just goes black and then it comes up, Spyfall Part 2, written by Chris Chibnall. And then, boom, keeps on going. No credits, no anything. And I was just like, oh, well, this is cool.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And then we got the Q&A.
So what are your first impressions of the Series 12 premiere?
It's a doozy. When I saw just Part 1, I was kind of like, well, a lot happened.
Right.
A lot happened. And I'm not sure I like that all that lot happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then actually seeing the two of them together in the cinema, I think I was more on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts?
I mean, the more I've thought about it, because it's been a couple of days at this point, is that it does seem one of the most, I know it's an overused word, but one of the most epic Doctor Who.
It's a big one. A lot happens.
I mean, I can't think of one that's bigger. I mean, I don't know if I'm talking quality or scope or both or whatever. You know, I'm not saying it's the best in the world, but I mean, it's pretty entertaining and pretty engaging. So, I mean, I can't think of another, you know, two-parter or Christmas special or even a single episode that kind of matches the ambition and scope.
Yeah, a lot happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you get all the things, all sorts of different, you know, you've got the Master and you've got the aliens and then you've got the bad guy who's 93% human and then you've got the historical character. It's a lot. And then you've got the Gallifrey teaser. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Yeah. All right, well, let's kind of in no particular order here. Well, so as I said, we you know, the season 12 premiere, the beginning, and we're not going to do the whole thing chronologically, but opening up with Part 1, we kind of just catch in with all our characters. You know, what have they been up to for the past year? They've been off the air, which I guess assume is real time. You know, everyone's back on Earth in their time period.
Yep.
And so what do you think of kind of where everyone is? I mean, it's just like one scene, but...
Yeah, we get to see Yaz's family again.
Yep,
which I think is nice. All three of them.
That's true.
We don't get to see Grandma.
That's true. Yeah.
Nana. They're just doing typical family stuff. The dad can't make his phone work. And and the sister wants Ryan's phone number.
And then we get to check in. Because it's one of those things where I think we've talked about in the past. And, you know, with Doctor Who, it's always like, yeah, whatever. If they don't catch up, it's fine. But they actually do catch up with her job. Because she's supposed to be probationary.
Yep.
We're like, well, if she's still going, and they explain that, you know.
Yes.
That her boss or her supervisor is like, you know, I can't really keep, you know, if I'm not looking after you, I can't really, whatever.
Yeah, but he also thinks she might have been tapped for special forces kind of stuff.
Undercover.
Yeah, so she's going with that. Mm-hmm.
Ryan has his own basketball group.
Yes, which he's not terribly good at.
But the fact that he's doing it at all.
Yes, absolutely. And see, that seems to have been a thing. Mm-hmm. But they talk about the fact that he's had, you know, all of these illnesses, quote unquote, that take him away. So,
I mean, I do like the callbacks, which I think is more, to me, a callback to, like, Amy and Rory. Because Clara, I don't know, she never seemed to be gone that long. You know, she'd always come back to teach her next class or whatever. But Amy and Rory, you know, it's like with her, or with his dad, would always be like, you know, they come back, you know, and they've eaten three meals, or they have a beard, hair's gotten longer or something, or, you know, just notice these things. That sort of seems to be what they're going for, the living both worlds.
Yep.
So it's nice to see that. It's also nice that Ryan has his own non-TARDIS fam peer group.
Yes. Yep. And then Graham is getting his checkup.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's a nice, not only a, hey, look, we're back in our regular world, but it's a nice touch base with, hey, remember, Graham's cancer is in remission. And, hey, remember, Ryan's got dyspraxia and he's not good at basketball. And, hey, remember that Yaz is a police officer and has a family that we've established. So it's this touchstone, not just for, hey, this is what they've been up to, but some of the key things that came into play last season.
Because I think there are parts where if this is your first series, you could catch up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Even though, you know, the ambition of, well, not that I know Chris Chibnall, but the ambition would be this is sort of phase two of how he's telling the story. You know, phase one was series 11. We're just going to, these are the characters. That's series 11. You're just going to know who these people are with no serialization. And now it's phase two. Now you know who they are. Now we can kind of throw some monkey wrenches around and stuff.
But, yeah.
Cool. All right. So obviously the big thing with this, I don't know, two episodes or one episode, however you want to look at it, was the spy motif.
Yep.
What'd you think of how that was done?
Not crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I appreciate how it ultimately comes into getting the spy who was, but meh.
Yeah. I mean, there were, you know, it kind of reminds me of when we were watching background stuff, like with Moffat doing The Return of Dr. Mysterio, like, oh, I'm into comic books, I want to do a comic book thing. And it's like, okay, now we have Chibnall doing, like, I want to do a spy thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you know, this isn't an episode of Psych where you change the theme every episode. I mean, you could, but it's just kind of a, you know.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a strange stretch.
Right. You know, where everything would come together, or, you know, the aliens were spy aliens, and
yeah, maybe they're just preparing for the next James Bond film, which I think is
it's a lot of cross promotion
of it. Yeah.
But I guess in the plus side, if you like the plus side of thing, we have Stephen Fry making his appearance
very briefly.
Yeah, appears as M. I'm sorry, C. Whatever. I wonder how they chose the letter, like, you know, because it's M in the James Bond world, or C. Whether, like, I don't know, does Stephen Fry get to choose his own letter? Or is it supposed to be like C for chief or something? Or
Cambridge?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I did like the little moment of where he greets Graham
as the new doctor. Yeah.
Don't be silly. The doctor's a man. But we sort of get with the whole spy motif. I mean, there's a lot going on, but then we get the chance for the gang to play dress up. We get the spy gadgets. We get the chases. We get the birthday party with, like, the casino motif and all that, so all that.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Eh, and I'm still trying to figure out, like, is Lenny Henry going to come back?
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't That part of the story is not resolved at all.
He escapes.
Yeah. Yeah. His part of the story is not in any way resolved. And I really want to know this whole issue with his mom.
Right.
Because that seems like a lot.
I mean, presumably, you know, he has their version of Google or whatever, and that's not going away.
Yeah.
Whatever. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
Vore or something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if
they pay attention or not.
Yeah.
Because if they don't go to Earth for a while, you know, they don't necessarily have to deal with the consequences of the story.
That's
as far
true.
As the Earth part.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're going to chase Gallifrey for a while, it'll be interesting, you know, halfway through the season, we come back to Earth and he's done something. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Talking about C, let's talk about O.
Let's talk about O.
What do you think of, I'm probably saying his name wrong, Sasha Dhawan, that's probably not how you say it. But anyway, what do you think of our new master?
Oh, he's very good. I really like him a lot. Thought he did some really interesting things. And I like, you know, he's sort of, there are places where it feels like he's channeling the most recent master.
Missy?
No. I would have said Missy if that were the...
That's the most recent master.
Well, no, that's...
You mean the man.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean John Sims.
John Sims, yes. A little bit with sort of the crazy eyes, particularly when he's on the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
But then also they bring in the classic Who mind-reading master, which we've not seen.
Oh, contact.
Yeah, since classic Who.
Mm-hmm. And then the Shrinky Dinks.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in New Who. That's a classic, of course.
Yeah, so...
Short of him hypnotizing someone, that was the only thing we missed.
Yeah, it was a lot of interesting pieces that I really enjoyed, and I thought he was great, and I'm hoping that he comes back.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I mean, 'cause that's a big thing to introduce a new master, obviously. And then, but do you use him again, the series?
You can. It's got to be carefully done. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, and I think it's got to be sparingly done, because one of my complaints about some of those classic series is, oh my God, the master won't go away.
Right.
But as they chase Gallifrey, I think he'll have to make reappearances while we figure out the Timeless Child. Because he knows all those answers.
Or at least says he does.
And theoretically, he's the one who destroyed Gallifrey, and so he's got to reappear, I think.
There's a lot going on with there at the end with the so-called destruction of Gallifrey, but, you know, and I don't know, because, you know, if this was Moffat, I'd be like, oh, we're going to find out. You know, there's timey-wimey, whatever. But I don't know Chibnall. I mean, you know, we know even the stuff he wrote before he became showrunner, but...
I mean, to be fair...
He's pretty straightforward.
You say that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of timey-wimey in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of timey-wimey in this.
Well, the... not to skip ahead, but, like, the plane part...
Yeah.
Where, at the end, she's like, oh, I have to go fix that. Kind of reminds me of a little Bill and Ted. Or, if you want to do it Doctor Who, The Curse of the Fatal Death. It's just the same thing, where it's like... Yes, but if I win, I go back in time and do this. Yes, but if I win, I'm the one who goes back in time and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But they do that in Bill and Ted. They do that almost the same exact thing. Bill and Ted came afterwards. So, yes, they're probably stealing it from them.
And see, for me, it reminded me a little bit of Don't Blink.
Right. Blink? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know.
Reading the thing.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Reading
sort
the script.
Of going back. And I think there have been other places, haven't there, where... The Doctor has gone back and planted things later on in the episode or whatever, you know. I liked it. I enjoy that kind of thing, but it's a little bit timey-wimey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll have a problem necessarily resurrecting Gallifrey at some point if that's the choice. I think completely destroying Gallifrey is a bold and possibly unwise short-sighted, perhaps, choice, because then...
Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
So with the Master, there was this fan theory that came up, and I'm...
Ooh, I do love a good fan theory.
Well, and I am... My instinct is always to go straight forward unless told otherwise. But the fan theory was, what if this Master comes after John Sims, but before Missy?
Oh, interesting.
Because, well, and I waver back and forth. There's a part of me that does ask the question the whole time. How do we go from Missy to the Master?
This one.
Yes.
Yes, and I sort of wondered, I don't know why that wasn't addressed at all. And is it going to be addressed?
Right. And I guess that's the thing hanging out there, because, as you say, he's very Sims Master. And, you know, regeneration, you always get a new one. I'm not trying to say, you know, that there necessarily has to be a straight line from a more redemptive Missy to the now 100,000%
really good
psychotic
point. Yeah.
Master. Because I feel like he's after Missy. I mean, that's what I think. I don't think they're trying to, because, I mean, if you really think about it, things are going to mess up at a certain point. If you want to go that extra step to connect those dots, because I think that's interesting, but, you know, whatever, is, you know, maybe he goes back, you know, regenerates into this current Master, and then he goes to Gallifrey as a redemptive figure, but then discovers
whatever he discovers.
And then that sends him over the edge, or whatever.
Back over the edge.
Right, exactly. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Though I did think it was very interesting. I forget what we were watching or listening to, possibly. Moffat would talk to, where Moffat would, I think, talk to Nick Briggs or sometimes during filming or something like that, be like, well, I left a little space for y'all to do some big finish. So, when the Master is, presumably, escapes from the Nazis, and then the next time we see him, he's running it back into the airport. He's like, I just had to spend, you know,
70 years.
And they're big finish. So, you know, yep. When Sasha's done,
absolutely,
there's a bunch of big finish adventures of the Master on Earth. You know, what was he doing?
Absolutely. And again, and we've talked about this before, some of the fun is seeing what new writers do to close gaps mm-hmm. that we've had. And to answer questions that we've had, but then also create new gaps and create new questions. So everything doesn't have to be resolved in one series. Uh-huh. You know, there's space to come back to it 20 years from now if they so choose, you know. And that's part, for me, that's part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
Is knowing when gaps have been closed. Oh, I remember that. That answers a question I had 12 seasons ago, but also not closing all of them.
So I guess we can segregate a little bit. So part one in and of itself, what were your sort of highlights for just part one? Because to me that had a sort of a different tone. I mean, it literally is...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not exposition, but that's basically sort of was this lighter expositionary tone and then hits that big reveal.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's, in and of itself, it's a fine episode. Obviously, then it goes crazy epic in part two, but I think part one isn't like a lame part one, and then it goes cool part two. I think part one's cool, too.
Yeah, and again, working with my personal part one felt more sci-fi, which is not my favorite,
mm-hmm.
whereas part two felt a little more fantasy, which is my favorite,
mm-hmm.
or historical or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think my favorite part one moment is the reveal.
Right.
It's just such a you know, it's great. The Master, yes.
Though it does make me think, I guess, I mean, I don't know, it's nine is always so short of a time, but I guess that means 11 is the only Doctor not to have a Master.
Nine didn't have one either.
Well, no, it's so short, but
yeah,
hard to count, you know, but
yeah,
you know,
it's fun.
10th got Sims, 12th got
Gomez,
and so 13 gets Dwan, if I'm saying that correctly.
What was your favorite part of part one?
Trying to think, there was stuff that I thought was not my favorite, but I didn't like it, did not like it, but like the bike chase, it was just something different. You know, we don't have any chases in Who all the time,
yeah.
Or like the part in the car at the beginning where the thing blows up. Also another thing we don't often see, a very action-y sequence. Not necessarily my favorite, but I'm trying to think. I think the whole mystery of the Kasavin, which to me, what do you think? I mean, we don't necessarily get answers per se, but I don't know, do you have any thoughts about what you thought they were up to or who they were?
No, and again, the whole spy thing...
I don't know.
There is still, and again, more questions, because none of that's resolved,
right.
Really. So will we get some sort of closure on that. I like the fact that sometimes the bad guys aren't the bad guys, so that would be interesting.
Well, I did thought, I mean, the effects were interesting with Kasalan, where they would sort of melt through the wall and look like that thing as they melted through it, and then they're the only thing, so, well, not the only thing. One of the things we've seen that seems like they can get through the TARDIS.
Yeah.
That was scary for a moment.
Yep.
So I think they were scary. I thought this was, they were very scary. They sort of had a voice that reminded me of the 456 from Miracle, or not Miracle, Children of Earth, Torchwood.
Okay.
It sort of had that same voice that that alien creature had when they would talk sometimes. And so, like, to me that was really upping the scariness. Like they were killing people left and right. So it's like there wasn't any sort of negotiation or plan. They were just, like, you know, straight up killing people.
Yeah.
So the threat was high, you know, not until you got, you know, laser dancing shoes can you really stop them. But what do you think of, we mentioned him a little bit, Sir Lenny Henry as Daniel Barton.
Sir Lenny Henry. I mean, I always love a little bit of Lenny Henry.
I say I'm not, I mean, of course, you know, me, but I'm zero familiar with him.
Yeah.
Apparently the co-founder of Comic Relief, you know, I don't know,
yep.
stuff I Googled, yep. you know, comedian.
I'm married to Dawn French for 25 years. Mm-hmm. They just recently, fairly recently, gotten divorced.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Right.
Again, as I mentioned to you off the record,
right.
I guess, in our regular everyday life, he does always make me think I need a nap because he did hotel commercials for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would see him, where I would see him regularly, was him telling me how soft the beds were. And I was like, okay. but of course, and you hadn't remembered, and I had to look it up because I was like, I feel like I'm remembering this right, but the look is so different. He, of course, was in the third season of Broadchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And again, looking very different. He's looking very svelte at the moment.
I was about to say, when I wikied him, the picture was a little heavier.
Yeah.
And
that's what I was trying to, that was the difficulty I was having. I was like, am I remembering this right? But yeah, looking quite svelte at the moment.
He looks like he could, Idris's older brother or something.
Aw.
Yeah. I know, not quite, but you know, I don't know, the age difference is probably something big there, but maybe his dad, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the age difference is.
But anyway.
I don't know how old Idris Elba is.
Yeah, I'm sure he's...
I mean, he's older than 20.
He's older than me.
You think?
Yeah, yes.
I sort of think so, too, but I don't know, you know.
That's right. Well, maybe the next Bond, who knows.
Fingers crossed.
Of course, maybe he's too old for, I don't know. I don't know, well, not that...
See, this is the problem.
Well, now this turns to... Like, I don't know how old the oldest... I mean, I'm not... Sean Connery did the one thing where he was really old. We're not counting that one. But I don't know how old the oldest Bond has been.
Yeah.
So...
I don't care.
Well, you know, it depends who they find next.
Yes. Yeah.
So... because theoretically, this one will be the last Craig one. Theoretically.
Theoretically.
That's why they probably said during the last one.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right, well, let's talk about part two's... To me, interesting sojourn. It was, in kind of a crazy way, made me think of Big Finish, because it's almost, not fanficky, but something we don't often see in Television Who. The only one I can think of that's comparable is, and you haven't seen it, because you said it's not the one you've seen. But anyway, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Oh, yeah.
When the Doctor's traveling with Cleopatra and, or no, not, sorry. Nefertiti, sorry.
Nefertiti, yeah.
And the game hunter from whatever. You know, where he has these sort of new historical companions. But now we have the Doctor with Ada Lovelace and Noor Khan. And it's like that was pretty much their, like, half the part two was just those three women, you know, having adventures.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I get the link, because this is all about technology and how it's taken over our lives. And so... Mm-hmm. Ada Lovelace and the first computer, and the spy who is using radio transmission, the first lady to work with radio transmissions
behind
enemy lines. Yeah. So I get the connection, although I think the spy is just a little bit tenuous, except it ties into spy stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, Ada Lovelace makes sense to me.
Which I admit I know very little. I think I just know the name Ada Lovelace, but I probably couldn't tell you zero about her other than one of this episode. And then I knew nothing about Noor. But I think that's a power of Who that hasn't been used. Not ever, but I feel like you probably have to go back to the classic era about, because part of the historicals, I mean, from the very beginning, you know, the historicals, you know, Doctor Who was arguably, in the beginning, an educational program, and then, you know, became an adventure program. But this one, it was, you know, and being very big of an adventure, but I mean, to me, and I don't know about the British public, you know, I know very little about these women or historical figures, you know, sex aside, but that's like something like, well, I'm going to go, you know, wiki these people. So like I was researching Noor Khan, very interesting, you know, unfortunate end for her. The Nazis did get her. At times, now maybe I'm just speaking of myself and I'll just insult myself. There's a lot of sort of assumptions of, you know, white maleness, like, oh, who invented the new computer? The computer must have been a white male, or, you know, all the spies in France were all white men and women. No, I mean, you have this, you know, Indian Muslim woman, you know, not British, but, you know, who, you know, we don't often see represented in history.
Yes, and I like that a lot. Ada Lovelace is certainly more known in Britain. In fact, I think there's talk about her being on a bill, mm-hmm. at some point, on a note, sorry.
Yeah.
And Lord Byron's daughter.
I mean, that's interesting.
Isn't it? I find it very interesting that Lord Byron's daughter was a computer genius. You know?
Well, rebelling.
It just goes to prove...
I'm not doing poetry.
Art is just as important as STEM, mm-hmm. because they are not disconnected. But, yeah.
But I did appreciate... You know, I guess it's that whole point of, you know, it'll be notable when it's not notable, but to have the three women that are three women, but of course, it shouldn't, you know, matter. But, you know, I noticed it. I was like, wow. I mean, whether that was conscious or, I mean, I think it was probably conscious of, like, whatever Chibnall was doing, but, which is fine. I mean, you know, make the master woman and you got everything, you know. It can't pass the Bechdel test just because the master's a man, and so when they talk about it, you know, even though you have three women. But I just still thought it was cool.
Yes, and I enjoyed it.
Well, we talked about it already a little bit, but any other things else to say about Gallifrey?
And the Timeless Child. I knew when those weird scarf things were floating around the second episode of last series. I was like, this is coming back.
I mean, I was thinking it was, but I mean...
And then it didn't.
Right.
But yeah, I was like, this is coming back.
You just can't throw that out there, which, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, that's, I don't want to say ballsy, but that's sort of like, we're going to throw something out the second episode, never mention it for another 10 episodes,
yeah.
And then bring it up and be like, ah, you thought we forgot.
Yeah, I like it that, but yeah. Again, that's so mm-hmm. Who.
Right.
You know, where you've lulled yourself into, oh, okay, this isn't coming up again. Mm. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, that crack in the wall? Yeah, it's still there, you know. And I like that. I like feeling like they've got an eye on all the things that are coming. And it's nice to look back, you know, let's look back at Gallifrey and start to tie in everything.
Yeah, and I don't know how I really feel about things Gallifrey, because, you know, it seems like, I mean, I don't know what the rules are. Like, and it's been a while since we watched, which one did we watch? Heaven Sent, but we didn't watch Hellbent.
Yeah.
And so, like, what are the rules about how you can access Gallifrey? I'm trying to remember. You know, when the 12th Doctor obviously got there through the, I don't know, prison thing.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the thing's called.
The handheld thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, like, to me, that was sort of, that's how he got there. But now you just can, your TARDIS just goes there. I was like,
yeah, that's true.
Seems pretty.
Doctor 13 didn't seem to have any trouble getting there.
Yeah, as opposed to, like, you know, with the. And then again, with the 11th Doctor, you know, the only way they could communicate is through the crack in the wall. And I don't know. So, I don't know.
Well, and maybe that was the thing, because that was it, wasn't it? That Gallifrey was coming closer to the town of Christmas.
Yeah.
And so maybe that rejigged something. I don't know. And maybe these questions will be answered later. Who knows? Who knows? Indeed.
Yeah. So, I'll say I'm not like, whoa, this is stupid, but I'm just like, okay, I'm not that excited about Gallifrey, because, I mean, the Time Lords are always nasty business one way or the other.
But I feel like this is a new, you know, we've been lied to, the things that we think we are, who we think we are. And, you know, that's,
So they said the founding fathers, which typically means...
Alexander Hamilton. We know, baby.
Rassilon and Omega.
Ah.
I mean, that's typically, but I'm not saying that's what the master meant, because who knows? The master's double, triple talk.
Yeah.
But... who knows?
Yeah, I think there's
guest star opportunities for those two.
And I think it'll be interesting. And again, who knows what holes will be opened and what holes will be closed, sure. As it were.
So, but I guess we have serialization now.
Yep.
So there you go, people. Happy?
Yes.
All right. I think we've gotten there, but anything's part two that you wanted to...
I do really, I quite enjoyed the fixing the airplane.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
we sort of had, you know, so, and we talked about 13, Ada, and Nor. But Yaz, Ryan, and Graham are on their own, uh-huh. For the most part.
Yep.
And having to, which I liked how they were sort of inspired the doc, you know, what would she say? What would she do? And they sort of were able to hatch plans on their own.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of, again, Torchwood, maybe even Miracle Day. Because I feel like there was a part where they all had to sort of, maybe it was Miracle Day, which I can't believe I'm referencing that, where they sort of had that thing where they were also off the grid.
Mm.
Like, they had, like, a laptop, and they had to sort of reestablish Torchwood in, like, a warehouse or something. But that's
kind
of what it reminded me
familiar.
Of.
Yeah, familiar. Yeah. Yeah, and I liked the fact that Graham was like, are you replacing us? And I felt like that was particularly appropriate from the old white guy. But... It was a nice little moment. And then they're asking for questions. I don't understand necessarily why the doctor's just not telling them.
Yeah, because, I mean, you understood, the way back machine here. So, like, I'm thinking of Martha asking 10, and because he's talking about Gallifrey, and he's trying to pretend like it still exists. Oh, maybe we'll go back. And then finally says, I'm the last of the Time Lords. So it's a painful thing, right?
Yeah, because of the Time War.
But 13?
But we fixed that.
13 being dodgy about her origins. I mean, the doctor, of course, is just secretive as an instinct. You know, the first rule is the doctor lies. But I don't know. This doctor does, you know, well, we don't, you know, we're still learning this doctor, but she's not like 11.
When
you think about it, it's weird. Even though 11 is so happy-go-lucky, he is the doctor lies.
Yes, very much so. And as you say, we may find out.
12 is more open, even as grumpy as he is. He doesn't lie. He's not mysterious as much as leave me alone. But then he's very heart in his sleeve on other times as well.
Yeah.
He's sort of very... I mean, he's very straightforward. 13, she seems straightforward, but I guess she is hiding stuff too.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it rolls.
Mm-hmm. Well, final thoughts about Spyfall?
I'm just so glad it's back.
Yes.
Did you just do... Was that an Adele thing?
Yes, it was.
Was that... Okay. Don't do it again. And maybe edit it out of this. I love you. I'm just so glad it's back. Can't wait to see the next one. Next one sort of automatically put me in mind of the one with...
because they were working out and she was in the gym.
Yes,
and then
yes.
The Pleasure Hive, that can't be
What's
it.
Her character's name?
Mel.
Mel. Yeah, I don't know that I would have come up with that.
You're like, no, that's... check again.
That doesn't feel familiar at all.
I want to say...
Not Mel. Polly? I could go with a Polly.
I'm
she looks
say
like
Joanna.
A Polly.
Yeah.
No, that's me.
Okay.
So, looking forward to seeing... And the next one appears to be a little bit lighter, which is a bit on brand for Chibnall.
Yeah, and because I think I probably have said this before, was that their story, he does try to do the tonal
shift.
Doesn't want to scare the bejesus out of you every week.
Yeah.
All right, well, with that, let's go into the TARDIS library.
Whoosh, 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 whoosh.
When you close your eyes.
I go to the library.
Go to the library now.
Well, I didn't necessarily plan to do this with January, but I have some First Doctor stuff. So this is a book for this time. We haven't done a book in a while. This is Doctor Who, The Handbook, The First Doctor, The William Hartnell Years, 1963 to 1966, which is a mouthful. This came out in 1994. Has three authors: David J. Howe, Mark Stammers, and Stephen James Walker. It's an interesting paperback. It's sort of separated into various sections about the Hartnell years and the beginning of Doctor Who. There's part one where it's kind of about William Hartnell, not like a biography per se, but it's kind of like if you've read oral history, like in magazine articles or whatever. Mm. It's just sort of people's quotes about Bill Hartnell.
Okay.
What it was like to work with him, da-da-da-da. And then stuff in his own words, clips from different things he said about himself. Which is interesting, because having read the Bill Hartnell biography by his granddaughter, I think that, I mean, that's more illuminating than what you get here. But there's kind of snips and pieces about, you know, it's what we've heard before.
Yeah.
Difficult to work with.
Yeah. Kind of an asshole.
Yeah, seeing himself in the role. But then there was sort of an interesting part about the Doctor, sort of outlines of the character when they were first made, where he was from or what he was supposed to be. But to me, the interesting part was, one, this is just as a reference book, so it's, you know, which you can have as Google, but sometimes it's nice just to have a hard copy of just all the First Doctor stories, where it's, you know, it's a synopsis of the story, and then, like, different things about what were the viewing numbers, and, you know, who was the director, and just stuff like that. Which I think is cool just to have on hand, so when you're doing your, you know, rewatch, you can know, like, oh, this is the day it came on, and how long the episode was, and how many viewers were, and different stuff like that, and maybe little different facts or quotes about it. So, I mean, I guess it's almost like TARDIS.wikia that we sometimes use, but it's in your hand, so.
Written on this thing exactly. Called paper.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool, because it's all just all the fish, you know, it's from, you know, 10,000 BC, a.k.a. the Unearthly Child, all the way to the 10th Planet, and even has information about the three doctors and the five doctors, which wasn't Bill Hartnell, but technically was the First Doctor.
Yeah.
And if they still had it, it'd probably have Twice Upon a Time. But anyway. But then I think an interesting part was it really tracks, it gives you the production history and the myth history of how Doctor Who was created, like, you know, this was the idea from Sidney Newman, or they wanted a sci-fi concept. And then it literally goes through the entire evolution of the show. Like, oh, we want it to have this. Maybe it's a time machine, but it can go big and small, or through matter, or through the star. And, you know, like, it literally goes through how they thought about everything, about which characters they wanted. And originally it was just going to be, like, the hero, and then the woman for, it was really a demographics thing, like, oh, you know, women want to watch women, and then there's going to be an old guy who's kind of the smart one, and then it wasn't until, like, later, they're like, oh, we should have a kid for the kids, you know, yeah, and then, but that children want to always watch someone older, so we don't want it to be a little kid, we want it to be, like, an older teenager.
Ah.
And, you know, and then it just goes from there, the different names that were different characters had, and then, like, the teenager's supposed to have a crush on the guy. And, you know, and it's just different, and it goes into the casting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then even the different things about what the TARDIS would do, what it would look like, what the Doctor was, what was the backstory, how much would we find out, how much would we not find out. And it's just really interesting. And then the latter part of the book, which to me was not as interesting, but if this was more of your interest, then it'd be very interesting. It's basically, it's the production diary of the entire series. But what it is, it's basically summarizing memos, you know.
Okay.
As sexy as that sounds.
This is the James Comey report.
Exactly. From the beginning to the end. And so it'd be like, oh, this is when we had the rehearsal here. Or, you know, this is when we're going to have this much budget. Or this was, you know. And, I mean, it goes by like day by day by day by day by day by day. You know, this is how much, you know, the at the end of the first one, this is the salary contract negotiations that Jaclyn Hill and William Russell were going through.
Interesting. And, yeah.
Goss, I guess, as you say. Yeah. And so it's in, you know, this is the stories that were being thought of. And then we kind of do this because then this is the studio we went to. So to me, I had started scanning really quickly after that part because to me, it wasn't that interesting. But hey, I mean, I'm glad they have this information because this is certainly the beginning of, you know, all the stuff. You know, this is almost going to be 60 years here soon. And this stuff disappears, and so it's nice to have it. Like, they had the audition for for Polly. This was the audition the actresses had to read for the people that auditioned to be Polly.
Oh, that's quite cool, yeah.
I
told you that was a Polly.
And then they picked a one episode, the arc. I say episode, you know, serial. To focus on at the end of the book, to just be, like, super zoom about how it would actually work to go through that one episode, pre-production, post-production, da, 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 da. And so that was interesting. So,
yeah.
So if you really want to learn more about the beginnings of Doctor Who and the, you know, nitty-gritty of what it was like, I mean, this is definitely a good book. It's a nice small paperback. It's a nice reference item. So it was very interesting about how it all started to me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
What are we talking about next week?
We're talking about the resort that these people are going on that I'm very excited about.
Yes, the episode is called Orphan 55.
Okay. Let's do that then.
All right.
Not to be confused with Orphan Black.
That's true.
Or Orphan Annie.
Mm-hmm. Got a third one?
I don't. I'm kind of disappointed.
I think we're all disappointed in you, darling.
The Orphan Train.
Oh. You're just making it up.
No, I'm not. I got this. All right, I got this, boo.
Well, thanks as always to Wally and the Sononauts for providing us with their jazz Doctor Who theme tune. And until next week, enjoy the Doctor's many adventures throughout
time and space.
This is BBC Television.